Last week we looked at the fifth commandment from Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. I pointed out that this command demands respect for those in authority, all who are in authority, to have a reverence for whom God has placed over us, that we should render them honor and obedience and gratitude, that we must give due weight to their position. This is the very essence of the fifth commandment. And as I pointed out last time, authority has several different aspects. Obviously, all authority begins with God. There is also self-government. That is, we must be able to rule over ourselves. I mentioned in discipleship training tonight that the very essence of authority is being able to submit our wills to the will of another. That's what submission is. It is to submit our will to the will of another. Obviously, with self-government, this means that we are able to govern ourselves, that we are able to control our wills, that we are able to govern ourselves and discipline ourselves, that we do the right thing, and not just simply those things that our flesh desires to do. It takes great discipline, and we give ourselves to it. In every aspect of life, by the way, even brushing your teeth on a daily basis, flossing on a daily basis, demands discipline. And it demands an act of the will, standing against that which you might otherwise be inclined to do. There's familial authority or family authority. And in family authority, children must obey their father and their mother. Wives must submit themselves to their husbands. Husbands must give themselves sacrificially for their wives in love. Family authority, there's spiritual authority, in which the pastor has been given authority over the church. The elders have been given authority over the church. There's political authority. God has raised up the civil government to have authority over us, that they might bind our wills from breaking the laws that they put over us. And God's given them the power of the sword, the ability to enforce their laws. And these are various realms of authority. And the fifth commandment deals with this authority. It deals with submitting our wills to someone in authority over us. But because the family is the first great institution of authority upon the earth, this commandment speaks primarily to the family. Children, honor thy father and thy mother. Families are the very foundation of society. When the family fails, society fails. And so the fifth commandment stresses the importance of the family unit. And obviously, if this commandment requires the honor of children for parents, then it also implies parents holding their children to this responsibility. If children are commanded to honor their father and their mother, then it is the duty of parents to demand that the children honor them. God has given the fathers the chief responsibility in this regard. It doesn't mean that the mother and the father are not going to be honored by the children. Honor thy father and thy mother. But the father is the head of the home. It is his chief responsibility. He will be called to give account. And so it is the father's responsibility to see that the children obey. Now, tonight I want to direct your attention primarily not to Exodus 20:12, but if you'll take your Bibles and turn to Ephesians chapter 6, because in Ephesians chapter 6, we have a parallel passage pointing to the fifth commandment. And it's repeated again in verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Well, this passage gives the charge to the children But it reminds us again that there is a responsibility to the fathers, to the parents, and it demands of us that we hold our children accountable for their actions and that we do it in a proper manner, because it tells us that we must not provoke our children to wrath. Now, last week, I made some comments. I stated that the way that we ultimately provoke our children to wrath is to allow them to pursue the course of their nature, because they are already full of wrath. And if you flip back a couple pages to chapter 2, and we read in chapter 2, wherein in time past, this is chapter 2, verse 2, wherein in time past, now it's talking about the way we were before God saved us. We were dead in trespasses and sins, in verse 1, and verse 2, in time past, ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. So it's making a statement in verse 2. They're already children of disobedience. Verse 3, among whom also we all had our conversation. By conversation, we simply mean our lifestyle, that aspect of our life. In times past, in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. In other words, we are not only under God's wrath, but it is of the very essence of our nature to be filled with wrath. In other words, by our very nature, we're filled with wrath and bitterness and hatred, and it is the very essence of who we are. Paul says in Romans 1:29, being filled with all unrighteousness and fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, and he goes on, backbiters. We are, by our very essence, we are children of wrath. Wrath is a part of our sinful nature. That's the reason Paul commands us to cast it away. In chapter 4 of Ephesians, verse 31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Ultimately, the only thing you have to do to provoke your children to wrath is leave them to themselves, and they will very easily continue to pursue the course of their very nature. But after the service last week, I was approached and asked a question. Because in the message, I prefaced it by saying, there are many lists of ways that we can provoke our children to wrath, but the ultimate way is simply to allow them to pursue the course of their nature, and they will very easily continue the course of bitterness and hatred and wrath. But I was asked the question, well, what are some of the ways? And it's a fair question. Perhaps there were several of you that began to ponder, yeah, but what are some of the ways? Give us some application. Tell us more clearly some ways that we can provoke our children to wrath, because obviously no parent wants to provoke their child to wrath. And so on one hand, I can give you a word that simply says, leave them to themselves and they will continue to pursue the course of their nature. We understand that. But are there some clearer ways, some more definite application that we can place upon that? So that is a fair question. And so as I pondered this week, I concluded it would be good to pursue this application just a bit tonight, to spend one more week looking at the fifth commandment, particularly as the fifth commandment is continued in Ephesians chapter 5, and it is continued in the sense of, yes, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And verse 2, honor thy father and thy mother, which is simply reiterating the fifth commandment. And we're reminded, which is the first commandment with promise, because the the fifth commandment says that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Paul gives application to the new covenant that it may be well with thee and that thou mayest live long on the earth. And then he adds another aspect to it. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. A slightly different version is given in the book of Colossians, chapter 3. You don't need to turn there. But in Colossians 3, verses 20 and 21, and I'm sure you've probably noticed that there's much in Colossians that parallels Ephesians. A lot of the same ideas are brought forth, and a lot of times you can compare the two to help give clarity to what's going on. Colossians chapter 3 says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." So we find two things going on here. One, the behavior of the father towards the children can, one, provoke them to wrath, exasperation, anger, and at the same time, be the source of great discouragement to them. In other words, in essence, crushing the spirit of the child. So obviously, there are ways in which a father can have a very detrimental effect upon his children. How can he provoke them to this exasperation? How can he provoke them to wrath or anger? How can he be the source of great discouragement upon them? Now, I'm saying fathers, but this applies to mothers as well. The reason fathers are being pointed out here is because fathers are the head. Fathers are called to give account. But mothers, under the authority of their husbands, also are responsible for raising and training the children. So both father and mother can be responsible for provoking the children to wrath. So tonight, I thought I'd spend some time simply giving you some further application on this. What are some ways a parent can provoke his or her children to wrath? How can they provoke them to manifest this inward baseness and hatred of authority and ultimately discourage them in the life that they must live? Well, let me just give you some of the ways, and we could go on and on. We could have multiple messages. There are many ways to apply this, but I think there are some very basic categories. And all I want to do tonight, time gets by so quickly, I just simply want to lay before you some of the categories. One is the category of discipline. To fail to properly discipline the children will always provoke them to wrath, will always provide this discouragement. Now, there's different ways to apply this. One, a parent can be too lenient in the discipline, which is far too common today, because today we have almost a total breakdown in discipline at home. Children are not getting the discipline that they need. And even worse, the entire culture today is bent against the discipline of parents upon the children. Corporal punishment or spanking is looked upon now as being child abuse. No one thinks that you should spank your children. And so the overwhelming direction of our society today is away from spanking. And the reason that they do not think we should spank our children is because they don't have an understanding of the child. They see children as basically good. They do not have an understanding of human nature. They do not understand that human beings are naturally depraved. They do not understand that human beings, by their very nature, are children of disobedience, and they must be held in check. They must be held accountable for their actions. They must be restrained from pursuing the course of their nature. And so children must be taught that there are consequences to their actions. And I'm afraid that in many families today, they are not being taught that there are consequences for their actions. And so we're seeing our society as a whole pursuing the course to where there's no consequences. That's the reason our prisons are overflowing, because children are not being taught that there are consequences for actions. So children must be disciplined, including the use of the rod. Now, why must children be disciplined, including the use of the rod? Let me give you several reasons why. One, because God demands it. The Creator, the one who made us, has determined how we function best, how children should be trained, how children respond best. The Creator who made us knows how we should function. And the Creator demands that we discipline our children. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. So one, because God demands it. But two, because the nature of our children demands it. The very nature of our children demands that we discipline them. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. God says this. This is the word of God. God says, let me tell you about your child. Foolishness is bound up in their heart. And he's not talking about some strange child that's completely different than all the other children. He's talking about all children. Foolishness is bound up in their heart. Now, let me tell you how to get the foolishness out. You can leave it in, and they will continue the course of rebellious behavior, even into adulthood. But let me tell you how to get the foolishness out of their heart. This is God speaking. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from them. This is not me talking, though I agree with it. This is not just me talking. This is God saying this. Thirdly, because it will save our child from a miserable life in this life and possibly from hell itself. This is God speaking again. Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. This is God that says this. The children must be corrected. They must be. And God says how and teaches us how they should be corrected. Fourthly, because love demands it. Now, parents have a natural love for their children. Usually, parents love their children in a sense of idolatry. We worship our children. Parents have a natural affection for their child. But God says, if you do not discipline your child, you hate your child. Proverbs 13:24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. And fifthly, because the consequences of a child left to himself will bring you misery. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. How often do you see it? Child in the supermarket, 6 years old, reaching for candy, and mama says, don't do that. The child starts screaming, the mom's all embarrassed, and she grabs the candy and gives it to him just to get him to quieten down. Bring shame to the mother. Proverbs 29:17, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. And so, if we are too lenient in discipline, we will provoke our child to wrath. We will be a source of discouragement to the child. Now, what's it mean to be too lenient in discipline? Well, first of all, let me say this. Mistakes happen with children. And I'm not saying that a mistake should be disciplined. We make mistakes. We are human beings. A child will make a mistake. A child, you're sitting down to eat. You're finally about to eat your supper. And there goes the turned over glass of milk. Accident Now, there can be horseplay, which can cause the milk to be overturned. That's a different matter. But children are children. Children make mistakes. I'm not saying that you then pull out the rod and spank the child who has overturned the milk, even though if you've got several children and you end up having two episodes in one meal of the milk being spilled, and you're saying, oh my goodness, but you restrain yourself, because I'm not saying that an accident demands discipline. But the moment a child manifests rebellion, you must respond quickly and instantly. Tantrums are simply an effort of a child to manifest his or her autonomy. Basically, what they're saying is, my will has not been honored, and you will honor me, and I will see that you do it. That's what a child is doing. My will is supreme, and you will bow to me. And so they throw their tantrum. And of course, the parents are either going to crush the tantrum, or the tantrum will have its desired effect. And the child will quickly learn that tantrums are profitable. Tantrums will get me what I want. The tantrum must never go unaddressed. That's being too lenient in discipline, and you're provoking your child to wrath. Open disobedience must never, ever go unaddressed. Now, what age do you bring the discipline? Well, you bring the discipline at the age in which the child manifests rebellion. It can be very early. Now, I'm not saying you take a six-month-old, and paddle their backside. But any parent knows that a six-month-old can demonstrate rebellion. You know what I'm talking about. You're changing the diaper, or maybe 8 months. The child wants to twist and squirm, and you understand. You've been there. The child doesn't want to lay still. A little pinch on the backside can quickly make them understand, Mom and Dad are in control here. You lay still while I change your diaper. Rebellion happens very, very early. Why do they call it the terrible twos? Because the child is seeking to manifest their authority all through this age. And the child must not win this battle. It's a battle of the wills. The child must not win this battle. If the child wins the battle of the wills at the age of two, you have lost the battle, and you better hold on with both hands, because it's going to be a very bumpy ride. If you're too lenient to your child, you're provoking him to wrath. But second of all, this is still under the category of discipline. Not only can we be too lenient, we can also be too inconsistent with our discipline and provoke the child to wrath. The secret to proper child discipline is consistency. And it's hard. I watch our young parents, and I mean, I'm so pleased with what I see, parents consistently disciplining the children. And it's hard because, you know, they want to sit down and enjoy a meal, and they have to get up two times, three times. And, you know, it's hard to maintain consistent discipline. But it pays off. Because you discipline a two-year-old, a three-year-old, a four-year-old, a five-year-old, and you find the discipline becoming less and less because you are winning their heart. You are gaining the child's heart. The heart, the child is understanding, my parent loves me. And by the time they're 10 years old, they understand my parent loves me. And I want to please my parent. And the parents find that they have to discipline less and less and less because they are winning the child's heart. But there must be rules. There must be regulations in the home. And there must be consistent rules that don't change every day. In other words, if it's wrong to ride your bike out in the street today, it's wrong tomorrow as well. And if you don't let them get away with it today, you better not allow them to get away with it tomorrow. And if they receive a spanking for it today, it is absolutely ludicrous for you to allow them to get away with it tomorrow. You're provoking them to wrath. Rebellious behavior must always be dealt with quickly and decisively. A.W. Pink puts it this way. The least offense of a child against the rulers of the home ought not to pass without due correction. For if it find leniency in one direction toward one offense, it will expect the same toward others. And then disobedience will come more frequent, till the parent has no control except that of brute force. What parent wants to live their life by brute force with their children because they're incorrigible? You see parents of teenage kids, you know, the kids are absolutely out of control. They're trying to ground them. They're trying to do this. They're trying whatever I can do to gain control over my child. But they don't have the heart of their child. So the child does not want to obey. And all you can do is chain them up because you cannot control them. Inconsistency will always lead to provoking the child to wrath. Children have to have consistency. They have to have order in their lives. Rules need to be known and their enforcement must be the same every time. There must be consistency. And you're also being inconsistent if you have several children and you treat them differently. One is disciplined more harshly or more frequently. You allow one child to get away with something and not the other child. And all you're doing is discouraging and provoking to wrath. There must be consistency in child rearing. But thirdly, still under the category of discipline, not only can you be too lenient and too inconsistent, but you can be too severe with discipline by making impossible demands that cannot be met, by being overly critical. Remember, God understands your weaknesses. He does. And He tends to overlook many of your weaknesses. God is very harsh on His children for open rebellion. He chastens us. But He allows us to make mistakes. I've heard, I think, of Samuel Bolton that says that God has great mercy for cannots, but very little for will nots. And there's a big difference. There's a big difference between God saying, do this, and you try, but you fail. There's a big difference between that and God saying, do this, and you say, I will not. That's open rebellion. But God understands our weaknesses. Psalm 103, 13 and 14, like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our frame, and he remembereth that we are but dust. We need to understand that our children are weak and frail. We have to understand the very nature of their childishness. And so you have a 2-year-old, and we do not allow them to manifest rebellion, but we do understand that they're children. And by nature of being children, they're prone to forget. They're prone to have short attention spans. Their minds are not even fully developed yet. They don't give great attention to detail. They sometimes manifest carelessness. Their coordination is not fully developed. They have poor motor skills. It's absolutely unreasonable to tell your child to go make their bed and you go in there and expect perfection. You're going to go in and what you look for is an effort. They have tried. But yet, there's a lot more bedspread on one side of the bed than on the other side. And the pillow may be kind of half-cocked and it doesn't look good to your standard. But they tried the best they could. And on that, you compliment them and you're merciful to them. You can be so severe by giving cutting words and harsh criticism. They try the best they can. You go in and say, what a terrible job you did. You're worthless. If you can't make a bed any better than that, you shouldn't even try. Just get out of the way and let me do it myself. You're provoking them to wrath. We always have to understand that the children are children. The punishment always needs to be appropriate to the infraction. You know, rebellion must be punished quickly and harshly. But disobedience stemming from forgetfulness still must be disciplined. And you tell your six-year-old to carry out the trash, they didn't rebelliously say no, they just forgot. Again, well, this needs to be disciplined. But it's not the same as open rebellion. And so you have to be wise to understand how to discipline, when to discipline, and not to be too harsh in discipline. And always remember that discipline should have a redemptive purpose. We are trying to point them to God. We're telling them God's demands upon them. And we're trying to teach them the importance of pleasing our Father. So we are never so harsh as to provoke our children to wrath. Well, that's the first one, discipline. I'm going to have to go through these quick. The second, you can provoke your children to wrath by failing to keep your position as parent. You are the parent. They are the child. Seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? They're the child. You're the parent. But parents today so fear the disapproval of their children that they will give them anything in order to get their approval so that they will like me. We've got someone we know that to take her daughter to Hannah, Montana, it was like $400 to take the child to see this 14-year-old gyrate and dance on the stage for a 6-year-old or 7-year-old, because I want my daughter to like me, because I want to be her best friend. So they take them to see Hannah, Montana, no matter what the cost, because I want my child to like me. Your purpose is not to be the friend of your child. They've got friends. Your purpose is to be their parent, not their friend. Now look, as parents, you can enjoy time with your children. You can spend time with them. You can enjoy each other as a family. You can spend time together, play together, enjoy each other. But parents are still the parents. They must always be the parents. And the children are not equal with the parents. They're not. And you can provoke your children to wrath by confusing your role as a parent. Your children are commanded, honor thy father and thy mother. And your job as a parent is to demand that they honor you. And so you must teach your children respect of authority. In fact, as you continue to teach your children to respect your authority, it's also a good idea to teach them to respect the authority of adults, period. We do that well in the South. We teach our children to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. All we're doing is teaching them respect of authority, to honor those to whom honor is due. Because the fifth commandment is a commandment teaching respect of authority. It begins with parents, but we're trying to teach them the respect for the concept of authority. And let me say this. I suppose there would be some that would disagree. But other adults should be able to discipline your child as well. I'm not saying spank, and I'm not saying usurping the authority of the parent. But taking a congregation like ours, if there's a child messing with the clavinova, any adult shouldn't have to go to the parent, tell the parent your child's messing with the clavinova, the parent comes up and then corrects the child. We should be teaching our children that if any of you go to the child and say, stop messing with the clavinova, they have enough respect for the authority of an adult to submit. We're teaching them the concept of authority and simply a word of correction from an adult. It used to be that way, and we're losing that aspect. Simply a word of correction from an adult ought to be sufficient. They're playing in a neighbor's yard. The neighbor says, don't pick the flowers in the flower bed. That ought to be sufficient. They respect the word of the adult. It ought to be sufficient. My little brothers were incorrigible when they were young. They truly were. Our next door neighbor had a rock garden, and my little brothers got some soap powder. I think all clothes detergent now is liquid. But you could get the big, huge boxes of Tide back then. There weren't any concentrates back then. My little brothers poured the whole thing of Tide in their rock garden. And when they were caught and the neighbor said, you know, what are you doing? They went, basically, so we need to teach our children respect of authority. Number three, you can provoke your children to wrath by a failure to demonstrate unconditional love. They should know that you love them unconditionally. In other words, they need to understand that you don't love them more when they're doing good, and you do not love them less when they are doing bad. And they have to understand that. This is the essence of God's love for us, and you should be reflecting God's love to them. When you're having a good day, God does not love you anymore. And when you're having a terrible day, you've sinned against God, you're crying before Him, God, I have sinned against you, He does not love you any less. You're provoking your child to wrath if they feel that they have to earn your love. That, you know, when I speak of gaining their heart, I'm not saying that you're teaching them that they have to earn your love for them. Quite the contrary. When I say that you're gaining their heart, all I'm saying is they have such a love for you and such a desire to please you that they fear to disobey you. They're not earning your love. You've already demonstrated before to them, you know, child, I love you. When I discipline you, it's because I love you so much, I will not allow you to pursue the course of your nature. I love you too much to allow you to pursue this course of action. That's why that when you spank, you need to tell them beforehand, this is why the discipline is coming. Let me explain to you what calmly. You shouldn't discipline in anger. Very calmly explain to your child, this is why you're receiving the discipline. I don't want to do it. It hurts me to do it, but I'm doing it because I love you. When it's over and they're through crying, again, explain that it hurt you to spank them, but you must because you love them so much that you want to see them pursue the course of obedience before God. You provoke your children to wrath when you fail to demonstrate this unconditional love. Number four, you can provoke your children to wrath when you don't allow them to voice their thoughts and their opinions. Now, while you demand obedience, absolute obedience, unwavering obedience from your children, you should always be approachable. God does this to us. God says, obey me. Obey me absolutely. Obey me without fail. If you do not obey me, it is sin. You must obey. We're looking at the Ten Commandments, and God says, thou shalt, and we obey. But on the other hand, He's our Father, and we can approach Him, and we can pray to Him. We can pour our heart out to Him. We can go to Him and express our heart before Him. When we approach our children, we should approach them with rules. It's a good thing to explain why we have the rules. You know, the whole thing, you know, do as I say and not as I do, or, you know, and not give reasons. It's perfectly fine for you to give reasons for the rules. Child, I don't want you riding your bike in the street because you're going to get run over. It will hurt you. And then when your child disobeys, give them an opportunity to explain their actions. Why were you in the street? Well, I rode in the street because. And then you say, well, that is not a reason for disobeying me. That is not a reason for you to disregard my rule. I will have to spank you. But you are provoking your child to wrath when you never listen to them. You never allow them to express their opinion, their mind, their heart. We should stop and listen to them. Listen to their heart. Listen to what they have to say. You're provoking your child to wrath when you do not. Number five, we can provoke our children to wrath by failing to teach them religiously and nurturing early piety in their life. And one of the dangers of Reformed churches, and I don't have a lot of time to go through this in detail, but one of the great dangers in Reformed churches is suppressing early signs of piety in our children. We must encourage piety. And by piety, I'm simply saying that, you know, there are times that you'll see a young child sincerely seeking Christ, desiring to be conformed to Christ. And yeah, we have to be very wise, and we have to allow the Holy Spirit to do His perfect work. But we must not prohibit a little child from coming, which means it takes great wisdom, because we have to be able to discern, is the child truly coming to Christ, or is the child just seeking approval? Is the child, is God stirring their heart? Is there true work? Is there a true work of grace taking place? You know, you begin to examine, is this true biblical of repentance? We're very cautious and careful. But the point is, we take the time to teach our children, expect obedience from our children, point our children to Christ, and when we see signs of early piety, examine it, encourage it, help it, build upon it, not just simply excuse it. But as parents, we must also bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Again, looking at the Ephesians 6 passage, verse 4, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Now, there's several words going on here, and I touched briefly upon them last week, and I'm not going to go into detail here. But the word "bring them up" is from the word ektrepho. Trepho, by the way, is the word to feed in the Greek. Ektrepho means to nourish to maturity, which simply describes to us the parent's responsibility to provide for the child, to nourish him to maturity. And I'm not talking about necessarily spiritual nourishment, though that's a part of it. But I think the nurture and admonition of the Lord points more to the spiritual nourishment. I think the ektrepho not only speaks of spiritual, but also physical. Parents have the responsibility to provide for their children. But then the nurture and admonition of the Lord, the paideia, the nurture, which means to discipline, and the admonition, which is nuthesia, which means to instruct and to teach. In other words, it is the parents' responsibility to train up their children in the pathway of righteousness. Now, you can look at it in two ways. And I'm not sure as Christians we need to divide it this way, but for the sake of clarity and teaching, we'll divide it up into two areas. One would be secular training, and the other would be religious or moral training. And the reason I say that as Christians we don't divide it, because your, quote, secular training is religious and moral training. We don't make a clear distinction between the secular and the sacred. For the Christian, it all comes together as one. But in order to divide it up, because our society does and our culture does, let me just say this. As Christian parents, you are responsible and accountable for the instruction or the schooling or the training of your children in secular instruction. In other words, whether you homeschool or whether you send your child to private school, it is your responsibility to instruct your child. Now, not every parent is equipped to homeschool, and that's understandable, and that's perfectly okay. But it is still your responsibility to teach your children. In other words, you're delegating the instruction of your children to someone else, but you must know exactly what they're being taught, what is being brought to them, how they're being taught. You can have your child in the greatest Christian school in the world, but you're still responsible for the instruction of your child. You know what's being taught, what they've learned, how they've learned it, what worldview they're receiving, what textbook they're looking at, every aspect of what's going on in their life, you are responsible for. homeschooled family, you are responsible for diligent, disciplined instruction of your children. I've seen homeschooled families. Some do it very well. Some don't do it very well. It takes great discipline. It takes great steadfastness in the life of the children. And if you choose to homeschool your children, not to realize we have a small group tonight, but if someone gets this tape and listens to it, I want it to be able to be applied wherever. Any parent that decides to homeschool the child, they must take it very, very seriously and apply themselves to it at a very early age and consistently train the child their entire school period. It is so essential. It is absolutely unfair because we live in a state where homeschooling is very lenient. The government doesn't get involved with the homeschooling a lot. All you have to do is provide proof of education, and you're pretty well free to do it yourself. But it takes great discipline for the parent to seriously teach the children day in and day out, taking responsibility for the training of the child. They must give themselves to it. I can give a kudo to my wife. My wife took the responsibility of training our children, teaching. And I can remember, you know, she's got a high school degree. It had been many years since she took algebra, if at all. And now the kids were beginning to take algebra. And the summer before they took algebra, she took their textbook, took a ringed binder, and worked every single problem in the textbook. She said, if they are going to be learning this, I need to know it absolutely. If they come to me with a question, I need to be able to answer it. If they come to me not understanding an answer to a problem, I need to have already worked it. And so she worked through every problem in the book. Every parent who determines to homeschool their children must take responsibility for it. Do not just simply coast along. You are responsible for your children. Whether you delegate it to someone else or whether you do it yourself, you are responsible for the instruction of your children. And then for the sake of argument, dividing the sacred from the secular, you are responsible for the religious and moral training of your children. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 and 7, "And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up." In other words, every day, all day, when you're outside playing with your children, when you're taking your children here, and you're doing this with your children, every day is a day of teaching them of Christ, teaching them of our great Creator, continually teaching them as the responsibility is upon us, we continue to point them to Christ. And you provoke them to wrath when they do not see it lived consistently in your life. We mentioned this briefly tonight in discipleship training. But your children can see hypocrisy. They have a radar for being able to recognize hypocrisy. They see how you relate to God. They see whether or not He's important in your life. They see whether or not Christ is the very focus of all that you do. They see it. They know. They understand clearly the priorities in your life, what excites you and what doesn't, whether or not Christ is exciting to you, whether or not the things of God excite you, or you find yourself excited over this or over that. They see it. They know. Don't just simply say, do as I say and not as I do. You can't expect them to be truthful if you're not truthful. Don't expect them to be honest if you're not honest. Do not expect them to love Christ if you don't love Christ. And they see it and they know. You have to consistently teach them by example in your own life. Now, this doesn't mean that there are not privileges of adulthood that children cannot be involved with. Sometimes we miss this too. Sometimes we think, you know, well, and you know, children say, well, that's not fair. You're able to do that. There are things that adults are able to do. You drive a car. Don't give your six-year-old the keys. You're able to stay up later than your child. A privilege of adulthood. You might drink coffee, and you don't allow your child to. There are many things that adults are able to do. When I say you live by example before them, we understand there are things that adults are able to do that children are not allowed to do. But that being said, you demonstrate clearly before them what it means to follow Christ. And they must see it in your life. Children owe to their parents love and honor and respect. And parents owe to their children love and godly training to honor God. And the God who created us demands these things of us. So parents, you're training your children to be the next generation of adults. You are training your children. You are training those that will be the next leaders in the next generation, teaching young ladies how to be godly young women, godly wives, godly mothers, teaching young men how to love their wives and properly provide for their families and to exercise godly dominion in this world. You are teaching your children that. So many parents today are putting their children in daycare, hiring babysitters at night, basically allowing other people to raise their children, not understanding the great responsibility that parents have to raise their children. It is your responsibility. Take it seriously. It is placed before you. It's a high responsibility. And when the biblical model is not followed, then you are provoking your children to wrath. They will pursue the course of their nature, and you will be held accountable. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. This is good and pleasing in the sight of God. And children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long upon the earth. Let's pray.